Amen. Well, it's good to see all of you here today. I was really, really hoping to have this special, perfect video for you guys. And since Mike's not here, we're going to blame it on him, okay? It's his fault that you're not watching a video, so you can tell him that next week. But basically, if you've looked in your little pamphlet, little notebook thing they give you, I don't know if you've seen what we're talking about today, or basically we're talking about giving. That's why we did the offering first, because I don't want anyone to feel like I'm trying to shake the money out of you, you know, and then pass the plates, you know, and see how much extra we get this time, because I spoke on money. So I don't want anyone to be confused about that. That's not what this message is going to be about. But we are going to talk about giving. Very touchy subject. A lot of people, hey, don't go near my wallet. You know, I've got my life. I they've got everything situated. And then Weston Ely, student, seminary, guest speaker, comes along and has to shake it up, right? So you might be saying, who are you to tell me to give more? Well, by the way, I am going to tell everybody, give more. That is going to happen today. I'm going to tell you, give more. Give more of your money, give more of your time. Well, let's just talk about money today. I'm going to tell you to give more. And I know, like, some of you are laughing, like, oh, I don't know if this is really that funny. But that's kind of where we're going today. Why can I do that? Why do I feel so free to do that? Well, the most pastors are really nervous about this subject. And I think Mike has even said he's going to do this at some point in time, where we're going to have a series on this. And I'm sure he'll be more nervous than I am, because I feel so free, because this is one of the first times I've really been able to talk about money where I'm not getting paid by the church. The last few churches I was at, they were paying me and to work with the youth. You know, I was doing work for them, doing some office work, and they would pay me. But then when the subject of money would come up, they say, hey, why don't you preach, you know, and preach on this, you know, preach about money, go for it. And, it kind of felt awkward. You know, I have felt that kind of sheepish, like, I don't know if I can really touch. I don't get paid by you guys, so I don't care, you know, what I say today. It's basically what I'm trying to tell you. But I think when I look at Genesis in Eureka, has such a heart for the community, has such a heart for really working with our hands. I mean, we do so much stuff in the community and working in the community. I don't think giving is going to be that big of a stretch. I think for a lot of us that are new to the faith, we're just not really sure what the Bible says about giving. Maybe you don't really know. You know, it's just kind of one of those things where you know there is something in there about giving. You know, the Bible says something about it. But maybe you're new to the faith, you're not really sure exactly what it says. I have a friend that I work with, and he was telling me, when I listen to a sermon, you know, when I feel good, you know, and it makes me feel good, I'll throw in a couple bucks, you know, here and there, every other week, something like that. And I was like, okay, you know, I work with a guy, so I don't really want to, you know, have too deep of conversation right before we're going in someone's basement to fix cracks and all that stuff. So I'm talking with him, and then he asked me this question after telling me, oh, I give a couple bucks here and there, you know, if I feel good, if message makes me feel good, if I've had a good time, you know, throwing some change. And then he asked me, how do pastors get paid? And to me, it's a funny question, because I was like, well, probably not from a couple bucks every other week, you know, it's probably not meeting the salary for the pastor. And but he just had no idea. I don't think anyone had ever really told him. I don't think anyone had ever said, you know, well, part of giving when we pass the offering plate is to provide for people that teach. It's to keep the lights on. It's to allow us to come and meet and gather and worship God. And that's what some of the tithe, that money we give when we pass the offering plate, goes to just kind of keep the lights running, pay the guy, Mike, to preach the word faithfully and to teach us and to guide us spiritually. It allows us to have sound equipment so we can worship God. Not that you have to have that to worship God, but it just kind of, what you give to the church pays to keep things going. Now, I'm not going to necessarily ask you to give more to the church today. That's another reason why I feel like so free to talk about this. I am going to ask you to give more, but I'm going to ask you to give more, not just to the church, to the community, and to the world, you know, like what we were praying about earlier today, where Dave prayed, you know, for these other people that are poor and in other nations. You know, there are so much good that can come from giving our money to less fortunate people. And so that's kind of where, you know, this guy who I was talking with, he had no idea what this, you know, what that basket, that little basket was for. You know, he just had no idea. And maybe that's where you're at. Maybe you just, you know, you're like, or maybe you're really new and you're like, oh my goodness, what did I just get myself into? But this plate that we passed, you know, that's kind of what it's for. Maybe it's a new concept to you. You know, maybe you've seen us do that, you know, for a couple months now, for a couple years, and just it's never really been fully explained what exactly that money goes to. So I hope to at least explain somewhat of what that money goes to today. Maybe another type of person, maybe you're unaware of the personal value, the spiritual value, the spiritual role that giving plays in your life. You know, maybe you know the money goes certain places, but you're not really sure how that impacts you or what Jesus, you know, demands of us to do and the spiritual role that giving plays. You know, maybe you're just not sure about all that. And the last the spot that probably I fall into is sort of this sort of, I'm calling it uncharitable. It's kind of funny to say, well, you're giving uncharitably, you know, because giving, we just assume if you're giving, it's charitable. But sometimes a lot of us have been in church for a long time. It's just another part of the routine. You know, we're just throwing money in every week. And we don't really think about, I'm worshiping God in this way. And so I'm hoping to challenge all three groups. For me, my challenge is that I don't lose sight of what this money actually goes to. That I don't lose sight that God is actually doing a work in Eureka. That there are people with needs that I am helping to provide, and you know that I don't lose sight of that in my giving. Now, the reason why I would fall into that is I grew up in a family that from day one taught me to give. It was just I can't remember ever having money and not giving. I can't because my parents, when they would give me $5 for cutting the lawn and cleaning up the house, which by the way is a sham, that is child labor, $5 for all that stuff, child slave labor, I swear. So I get $5 for this, you know, and you know, Daniel down the street gets $20 for, you know, waking up with a pulse every morning. And you know, I'm working for $5, and when they gave me that $5, they would never give me $5. They would give me $4 and 4 quarters. And they would say, now, 50 cents of that needs to go to the church. And I was thinking, well, 50 cents of this needs to go to the church. Why don't you just give me 550, you know? And so I have grown up, I cannot remember not tithing. I can't remember it because it's the lifeblood of my family. I won't tell you the story today, but my family has a very unique story with tithing. And it's just a part of our life. The word tithing, that might sound really weird to some of you guys. You're like, I don't even know what that means. It means one-tenth, and that's kind of the Old Testament standard for giving. You know, everyone would come and give a tenth of their money, and that would just be kind of be bottom line. Everyone needs to do that. And that's how the Old Testament, before Jesus' time, that's how they would give. And so a lot of people in the church today, they kind of use that as just, you know, well, I don't know what to give. Well, where should we start? And you'll hear a lot of people say, well, we'll tithe, you know, we'll give a tenth. And so I just have always in my life, I just cannot remember a time where I earned money and didn't give. And now it's so second nature that, you know, every week if I don't forget the checkbook at home, I'm just throwing the 10% in. Because it's just habit, you know. And there's a good part of that one, you know, there's been that habit instilled in me, so I'm conscious of giving and I want to give. But if I'm not careful, I'll fall into just a routine. My worship will become stale. I won't think about who this is going to help. I won't think about, you know, all the benefits that this produces, you know, by allowing us to worship, by providing for the needy in the community, and I won't think about it. And that's a trap that some of us who are really familiar with tithing, maybe some of you thought, well, I'm tithing, so I'm good on this sermon. I just can sit back and, you know, watch all these other people squirm, and I'm good, I'm set. But the truth is, if that's where you're at, I'm asking you to give more too. So that's where we're going today. I guess there is kind of a fourth type. I don't think very many people fit into this because you'd have to be like perfect. But it's just this, you're informed, you're aware, you're charitable, and it's just very rare. But it's so infectious when you see someone like that. It is so infectious when you see people that give so much, like so much of their money away, that it just blows your mind. And you're just like, I don't understand how you can give so much money away in a culture where there's so much stuff to buy. There's so much stuff to spend my money on. There's so many places to go see. There's so much stuff I can do with my money. How do you give it all away? Aren't you worried you're not going to have enough fun? Aren't you worried you're not going to spend enough money on yourself? There's a church in Minnesota, and I'm going to quote a guy later today who's their pastor, John Piper. This church in Minnesota, they gave away so much money. The people would give money to the church so much that the church said, okay, well, there's too much of it for us to spend here locally, and too much of it for us to spend in this church. We're going to send it overseas, and they send so much money overseas that every year the IRS has to come and audit them. That's amazing. Okay, that is sort of the hope and the dream of, you know, like a pastoral dream to be in a church where that's how crazy giving the church is. That we give so much money, not just individually, but as a church, we give it and we just give it away. Give so much money away that the IRS looks at us and says, you can't write all this off as tax write-off. There's no way you gave that much money. No way. And that's what this church in Minnesota does. And it's just a phenomenal story. And when you're around people like that, it's infectious, but then it's also, it's kind of one of those things where you're like, well, I can't be infected by this because I got to keep my money. So, you know, it's just, they're these odd, weird people. But it's so beautiful to see 50%, you know, huge sums where you're just like, there's no way you give that much money. 50% of your money gone. And you just, those people, and that's kind of my hope and my dream for myself, is to be not necessarily where I'm giving 50%, if I make enough maybe, but my hope is to have that attitude, to have that heart where I want to give. I see so much surplus in my life that I want to give it away to help other people who are needy, who are poor. And I think that's what we're going to see as we look through. Well, I know that's what we're going to see because I've been studying it all week. That's what we're going to see in this passage today is this New Testament standard of giving. You know, what is that? And one of the reasons I think we misunderstand giving, where we're like, well, I don't know if I can give right now. I don't know if I make enough money. I think one of the reasons we misunderstand what it means to give is because I think for a lot of us in America, I think this is probably going to be one of the big issues is we don't have a good gauge of our wealth. We don't really have a good gauge of what it means to be wealthy or what it means to have a lot of money or what it means to be rich. There's a professor in Chicago, and he wrote a blog a couple weeks ago. This is actually on the MSN homepage website. Was one of these, you know, they got those five articles, and it clicks through, you know, and one of them was talking about, you know, this professor who wrote this blog, and I don't want to like throw him under the bus in case he's listening. You know, you never know. We record this; it goes online. So, his family makes $250,000 a year. And he is writing a blog in the context of a political discussion that we are not going to have in this format. I would love to have it with you outside, but you know he's talking about tax raises, you know, and whether you're for or against it, you know that is not my concern right now. My concern is more with this guy's line of reasoning behind why he doesn't think he should pay taxes. Now there are perfectly good reasons and perfectly good healthy debates that we can have about taxes. Not the issue. This is the issue. The guy makes, his family makes $250,000 a year, and he wrote a blog describing to people that he's not rich. And I read that, and I'm just like, okay, because that seems really wealthy to me, you know. My guess is that seems pretty wealthy to most of you. You know, that's my guess. It just seems like a lot of money. Now, he lives in Chicago. You know, we live in St. Louis. There's a little bit of a different, you know, economy, but $250,000 is a lot of money. And he goes to great lengths to say, look, I'm not wealthy. The people that are wealthy are the people that make $1 million. The people that are wealthy are the people that make more than me. But I'm not wealthy, so don't include me in that category. And he actually puts his budget online, you know, what he spends money on. He's like, look, you know, I pay someone to cut my grass, and I pay someone to wash my baby, and I pay someone to clean my house, and I want to invest in my community around my college, which, yeah, it's a pricey neighborhood, but I'm committed to my community. So I'm going to live in that house, and yeah, it's an old historic house, so I got to renovate it. But, you know, that's just the sacrifice I have to make in order to invest in my community. So I'm going to live in this house that's two blocks away from the university. And he goes to great lengths to show his money is tied up. He's not wealthy. He's got all this stuff he's got to pay for. And at the end of the month, there's only a few hundred dollars left of surplus, which that right there, like, blew my mind. I was like, you have surplus? Oh, my gosh. I didn't know that was possible, like, you know. Are there people out there who actually save money right now? So he goes to just great lengths. And I begin to think, what makes someone able to say, I make $250,000, but don't call me rich. I'm not rich. What allows a person to do that? You know, he basically, if I got the numbers right, I think he's in the top 3%. It may even be higher than that, but I'm going to be generous. He's in the top 3% of the United States wage earners, and in the world, he's in the top 1%. And that's probably really generous. You could probably break it down further than that. But, if that's not rich, if he's not rich, what am I? You know, like, I'm, like, slumming it, you know, like, living on the street. And so I'm thinking, okay, if that's not rich, you know, and how do you get to the point where you are clearly in that upper echelon of wage earners, and you say, well, I'm not rich. The people that are rich are the ones above me. And I read an interesting article about this article where it gave me the answer. So I didn't have to do as much research this week. They said it's called the hedonic treadmill. I got it up there, hedonic treadmill. Now, hedonic may be a word that you've never seen. I had never seen it before, but I have seen its root word called hedonism. And hedonism is basically this term of, well, I do everything to gratify myself. You know, my life is all about pleasing myself. I'm all about pleasure. I'm all about finding, you know, spending money on me and everything needs to reflect back to me. I need to please myself. That is my life goal, is just pleasing myself and making myself happy. And I need to structure my life in such a way that goal is going to be met. And so the hedonic treadmill is this term that psychologists have coined, I think, since the 70s or 80s. And basically what it says is that as we increase our pay, or increase our wages, our life starts to change a little bit. We start to spend money on things we'd never had before, things we probably always wanted. You know, if you think back to when you were younger, you know, you might say, you know, right before you got into the job force, right before you were working, you're thinking, you know, man, my life would be set if I could have this particular car, if I could live in this particular neighborhood, if I could, you know, if I could have this type of a cable package, if I could have this type of TV, surround sound, you know, if I could have this, whatever material thing it is, and you're thinking, man, if I work hard enough, I can get that. And so what happens is we work really hard, we get a job, we start earning some money, and we buy these things. And they make us feel so great. I mean, when I get a new video game system, like, you cannot pull me away from that thing for a few weeks. I mean, I'm just glued to it. This is so amazing. This feels so good. I'm so happy that I am playing this video game, or that I am watching this huge TV, or I am driving in this awesome muscle car. A few weeks later, months, years go by. It's just another piece of equipment. There's a new TV that comes out. You know, the car breaks down. The video game system gets outdated. And when we, at one point in time, had so much pleasure in this item, so much joy wrapped up into this this object of our affection, we now start to say, well, you know, it's not that big a deal. And as we progress in life and live life, we start to feel the need to replace it, you know, or the need to upkeep it. If you have a certain house, you move in, it feels great, it's awesome, you don't mind spending the mortgage on it, but then after a few years, it's like, okay, this is just another bill. This is just another payment. I gotta mail it off. Just another thing I have to be responsible for. You know, and that sense of joy and pleasure fades, and then responsibility hits in. And now we're paying. And now we're making payments. And it's just another routine. And when I look at this professor from Chicago, if you look at his budget, what he says is necessary for his life to exist, a lot of us would say, well, I don't have that. So what do you mean it's not really necessary, I guess? But, you know, it is a luxury. But what he has done is over years of having these luxuries, they no longer seem like luxuries. It's no longer a luxury to have someone come and cut your grass. It's just another thing that you have to do. You know, it's no longer luxury that you live two blocks from where you work. It's just, now it's just another thing you have to do. And so this is the hedonic treadmill, that we start buying this stuff, but then eventually it turns into work. You know, you have to, you know, I mean, imagine if you're running on a treadmill. I can only do this for about a minute. You're running on a treadmill, and at first maybe it feels good. This doesn't feel good to me, but at first maybe it feels good. But then eventually it's work. I got to stay on this thing. In order to stay in the same spot, I've got to keep working. And the more I do it, the more frustrated I get with it. You know, I don't want to do it anymore. I have to stop. You know, and it becomes work. And that's what this term is describing. That we spend our money in such a way, and we enter into investments in such a way that they first give us joy, but eventually turn into work. Eventually turn into something, just another responsibility that we have to do. And my concern is not with whether or not his taxes should be raised. You know, I don't even know if he's a Christian or not, so my concern is not really with him. I just thought it was a perfect example of what we do in our Christian lives. My concern is with us, followers of Christ, that say we are going to follow Christ and we're going to live for him, and our life is going to be about promoting his glory. Oh, I can't give. The guy who makes more than me needs to give. I have all these things in my life I have to spend money on. You know, go hit up the guy who makes more money than me. You know, my fear is that attitude and that way of looking at money and that way of looking at how we have structured our lives, that attitude comes into that becomes part of the church, that Christians start to look that way. And maybe you're a new Christian and you're looking at giving, and you're like, well, I've spent, you know, 20 years of my life structuring my finances in such a way that, you know, I make this much money and I spend this much money. How can I give? I'm already maxed out. There's no more room for me to give. And so it can be very difficult for new Christians or people that have set patterns in their lives of, well, I'm going to make this much money, I'm going to spend this much money. It's very hard to give up here. You know, I'll put you in the red. So my concern is that this attitude of looking at finances, looking at money, that occurs in our life as Christians. That we look at Christ and say, look, I can't give to you now, but I'll give to you later. I'll give to you when I make more money. You know, that's my fear. That's my concern. Don't care about the taxes issue. I'll talk to you about that afterwards. You know, some of you might be for or against it. I'll tell you both wrong and tell you why. But that can be an awesome, healthy discussion later. But I'm just so concerned with that this attitude has crept into our lives as people who say we follow Christ. And I want to look at what Jesus says, because he's going to give us the New Testament standard of giving. The Old Testament was 10%. Give 10% and you're good, you're solid, check it off the list. New Testament's a little different. And Jesus is going to show us here kind of how he judges a person's giving. And we're going to see it in Mark 12, 41 through 44. You can look on, get Pew Bibles. They're off on the side. I just call them Pew Bibles. We don't even have pews in here. That tells you what type of churches I've been at all my life. Now, we have much comfortable chairs. You have Bibles on the end of your row. If you need one, take one. That's our gift to you. But we will be looking at Mark chapter 12. What was the page again? 724 or 725, depending on which edition you pick up. And Jesus has shown up to Jerusalem. This is like the final stage, right before, you know, everything is about to go down. Okay, right before the crucifixion, and And when you look at the way he talks, it's no shock that these people were really angry with him, you know. My goal here is to try to tread between, you know, oh, we're really making me mad, or you're laughing, so we're not going to, you know, crucify you like we did Jesus. But you look at, like, Jesus, some of the stuff he says, it's not a question. He was really stepping on some toes. And he has entered into Jerusalem, this holy city for the Jews, and he starts to teach. And he's teaching against the leaders, you know, the scribes and the Pharisees. These are the religious leaders. And he starts saying, look, the way they've got this system worked out, it's just not right. And he kind of starts stepping on some toes. And he goes into a temple, and they're there to worship God. And one of the ways they worship God in the temple was by giving. And he sits down, and he takes a look at this scene that's happening in front of him. Verse 41, and he sat down opposite the treasury and watched the people putting money into the offering box. Many rich people put in large sums, and a poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which make a penny. And he called his disciples to him and said to them, truly, I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to this offering box. For they all contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had, all she has to live on. So you might have some questions when you read this. You know, you get a, kind of the basic feel of what's going on. He's sitting down in a church service like this, and it's offering time. You know how when we have we do the Lord's Supper, and we have the little grape juice and a little bit of bread, and we come forward and we put in our offerings. That's kind of how they did offerings. You know, they didn't pass a plate around from aisle to aisle, but they got in a line, and they would go up to the plate, and it'd be a huge line. You know, a huge city. This is like the temple. You know, everyone goes to this, and so a huge line, and all these people are throwing in money. Well, they're throwing in money because the treasury paid for, much like what you see. Paid for here. You know, it pays for the worship service. There's a good chunk of the treasury. I think they had like 13 different boxes that they could put in, and nine of those would go towards, you know, different services that needed to be done in order to kind of keep the lights running, you know. It would pay to allow worship to take place. And so people would come in, they're coming into worship, so they're giving their fair share. You know, I need to help provide, you know, to kind of keep the lights running. So that's kind of what was going on here with nine of these boxes. You know, it keeps the electricity running, the band playing, allows us to rent space, and that's what they're throwing their money into. There's about nine of the 13 that are in there. And then there are some other ones that help the poor. And money that goes in there, they send off to people that are lame. They can't walk. Not like losers, like people that can't walk. No one laughed at that. So these people that can't walk, blind people, you know, it goes to the poor. It goes to people that can't help, the poor and the needy. They can't help themselves. They need help from other people. And so some of that money goes to that as well. And he's watching this whole scene, and he sees people throwing money into these offering boxes, is how it's translated here. They called it trumpets because of the way the mouth of this box was. It kind of had a little, it was like a vase almost, you know, big metal type of vase, and they'd throw their, you know, bag of coins in, you know, and make a big loud sound, and, you know, you throw it in. There's even some rumor that when you throw in some money, trumpets would play. I don't know how historically accurate that is, but that's kind of why they called it trumpets, because of the shape of it. And so they're throwing money, you know, it says there are a lot of rich people there, so they probably had, you know, some money bound up in a bag and just, you know, toss it in, you know, and just you hear boom, you know, it hits the bottom of the plate. So they're throwing, you see people throwing money in, and he says there's a lot of rich people there. It's probably pretty obvious back in that day. You know, we wear casual dress here, but if we went to, you know, kind of a what they call high church where everyone wears suits, maybe this is, you've been to a church like this. I don't think I'd survive for a second, but, you know, everyone wears a suit, everyone wears a tie. Every once in a while I can go for a tie, but not every Sunday. And so you can tell, you know, sometimes you can tell by the way suits are made, oh, that is an expensive suit, you know, or someone's got just kind of plain black, you know, little skinny one from Target. That's the one I own. And you're like, oh, that guy's not rich, you know. And so you see, they had kind of the same thing. You could tell by the dress. You could tell by maybe how much money they were throwing in, how big that bag was. You could kind of tell who was rich. And Jesus sits and sees, you know, some pretty well-off people throwing in large sums. I mean, he gives them credit. He says, these guys are giving a lot, you know. And the average person would think, hey, those are the people that are really helping this church out. And those are the people that are really helping the poor out, because look at how much they're giving. That's amazing. I mean, we should be so thankful and appreciative that these are the people that have it right. These are the people I should aspire to be like. They're given so much money. And then, you know, Jesus talks about this poor woman. Now, you could probably tell she was poor. He says she was a widow. I'm assuming he either knew that because it was someone who was known locally, or maybe it could be that she was a woman there without a husband. This is a spot in the temple where men and women and children, everyone could be, and then they had their own little rooms where they would divide up. But this was a spot where everyone could be, and maybe she was there without anybody. And she's this poor old widow, and she throws in a couple coins. And these couple coins, they're like, it's like a day's wage, you know. It's like, I think it's like 1/64th of a day's wage. You know, so it'd be 1/32nd she threw into. Do the math real quick. So she throws in this money, you know, and it's negligible. It's nothing. There's no reason to have a bag. You don't have to wrap it up to throw it in. It's just two coins, you know. You toss it in, and maybe because of the way the vases were, where there's this metal stuff, you know, you without having the bag to kind of contain the sound, you throw in the two coins, and you just hear a ding, 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 you know, and you just imagine this big auditorium, that sound just bouncing all over the place, and everyone turns and looks at this woman, and you just hear ding, 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 you know, and that coin, and you're like, what is she doing? Well, why even waste a spot in the line? There's people behind her that need to give up and actually give some money. What's this old lady doing, you know? And that's kind of how people would have thought, you know. She's just given nothing. What's the point of even giving? What is she doing here? And Jesus calls his disciples over, and he says, look, I want you to see this. I want you to look at this scene. I want you to see these people with nice clothes are well off. They're throwing in big sums of money. And I want you to see this poor widow that everyone's trying to figure out why she's even here. Why is she even in line to give money? And he tells them that he sees the situation different. He doesn't see these people that are given large sums of money as having the right answer to what it means to give spiritually. You would see these people, oh, they're given all that money. They must be super spiritual. They must have it all together. They're the super Christian. They're the way I need to behave. They're the way I need to follow. And he says, you know, it's actually this poor woman who gave in two coins that, you know, you might not even pick up if you saw on the side of the road. These people, this one is the one who actually gave. She gave more than all of them. All their sums of money, all their bags of money they threw in, this poor woman gave more. That should sound shocking because, I mean, I was good at math, okay? I was really good at math in high school, and I really enjoyed it. And I even took classes. I took, advanced more classes than I needed to graduate with a religion degree. I took more math classes. I took a math class to fulfill one of my electives, okay? I'm decent at math, okay? Two coins that make up 1/32nd of a day's wage is not more than all of these people combined were giving. So there's something a little bit deeper that Jesus is talking about, and it's pretty clear what he's saying, because he gives us the key to what giving is judged by. For they all contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had, all she had to live on. It's clear that what Jesus is promoting is sacrificial giving. The New Testament standard of giving is giving. New Testament standard of giving is sacrifice. And it's clear that she gave everything she had, all she had. I mean, she might have been throwing in what she was going to eat off of that day. You know, so she was like, well, I could keep this money and eat, or I could give and fast, two birds, one stone, toss them in. And so maybe that's where she was going. And you see this level of sacrifice that Jesus is commending. He's saying, look at this. This is the heart of a giver. Even though she doesn't have much to give, this is the heart that I truly appreciate. This is the heart she has it. She has giving down. She is desperately poor, but still has a heart to give. And that's what he says is beautiful. That's what he tells his disciples. This is the one that has it. This is the one that understands what it means to give. And so the New Testament is pretty clear that this stand, you see it all throughout Scripture. Mark 10, 21, another place where Jesus says, and Jesus, looking at him, loved him and said to him, you lack one thing. A rich man came to him and said, look, I do all the commandments. I'm pretty much perfect, right? I'm good. I have this thing down, right? And he says, no, you lack one thing. Go sell all that you have and give it to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Come and follow me. That's a tough statement. I've heard a lot of people explain it away about, well, okay, what he was doing was trying to play a trick with them, and he just wanted him to see that he wasn't perfect. He didn't actually want him to give it all. He told the dude to give it all, you know? That's a tough statement. Now, I'm not saying everyone start writing that, like, max out your credit cards and max, you know, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying there's a level of sacrifice. You know, Jesus is pretty clear. There's a level of sacrifice that is expected. That's what Jesus is calling us to do, is to sacrifice in our giving. Another place we see is Ephesians 4:28. Let the thief no longer steal, but rather let him labor, doing honest work with his own hands, so that he may have something to share with anyone in need. He's saying, you know, there's three ways that you can treat money. You know, you can steal it, or you can do honest labor and keep it, or you can do honest labor and give it. You know, and that's what he's saying. This is Paul speaking to a church, and he says, you know, when you earn money, don't just think about how you're going to spend it on yourself. When you see other people with other stuff, don't just think about how you can steal it or how you can earn more money to get it. Think about the people who don't have anything. When you earn money, think about these people. Think about what you could do to help them. And this is the call on the Christian life when we approach money, to think, okay, I make this money, but instead of jumping on this hedonic treadmill, burning myself out, buying a bunch of stuff, and then trying to buy more stuff to keep that joy, that level of joy up, to maintain that level of joy, I need to be thinking about the person who's going to struggle about, what am I going to eat tomorrow? I need to think about the person who's going to struggle with, you know, it's raining, I need to crawl under a bridge tonight. You know, I need to be thinking about those people. I need to have some sort of, my heart needs to be in that direction. I'm not telling you, go move under a bridge and give all your money away. What I'm saying is, once your needs are met, just start thinking about it, you know? Start thinking, how can I help other people? If you help other people right now, start thinking about, how can I help other people more? Is there another group that I could start helping? You know, I give to my local needs. Are there people overseas I can start helping? You know, this is sort of the mindset that the teachings of Jesus are wanting to produce in us, that we stop looking at how to satisfy ourselves and we start looking at how to provide for others. But the problem with having money and the call to sacrificial giving is, you know, it's just that we jump on this treadmill. We have this money and we start spending this money and we make this much money and we spend this much money, and then we're called to sacrificially give. If we make this much money and we spend this much money, anything we give is going to be a sacrifice because we've left no room. We've left no room. So we cut the smallest little thing and we're like, oh my goodness, I'm sacrificing so much because I've maxed out my entire life. I got a few quotes. This is from a guy who wrote 125 years ago. I just find it interesting to read someone who's much, much older from a different culture, because we live in a culture of consumerism. You know, back then, you know, America lifestyle was not quite the same. You know, it wasn't just everybody having all this money and running, you know, all this entertainment. And life was simpler back then. It doesn't mean they didn't sin. It just means the American lifestyle was slightly different. So this is written in 1870. And he says, many one did run well as a poor man who forgets God when he is rich. You know, even in his time, he recognized there are people that they're living for God when they're poor, but then they start getting rich, and they start having all this extra money, and they start trying to find ways to spend it. And in all that pursuit of how to spend that money, they forget God. John Piper says, the issue is not how much a person makes. Jesus didn't say, hey, these people are rich, they're terrible. He actually didn't say a negative thing about them. You know, Jesus didn't, in the passage we looked at, Jesus didn't even say that what they were doing was bad. He said, I mean, he actually kind of gives them a compliment. He said they're giving large sums of money. But his issue isn't all these people aren't giving enough, or all these people, you know, are rich, you know. But the issue really is this person. He's just promoting. He's saying they're doing good, but this person really has it. This poor person really has it. You know, the issue isn't go live your life as a poor person. The issue is look at the heart. The heart is the sacrifice. And he says, so the issue is not how much a person makes. Big industry, big salaries are, in fact, of our times, and they are not necessarily evil. The evil is being deceived into thinking a six-digit salary must be accompanied by a six-digit lifestyle. God has made us to be conduits of his grace. The danger is thinking the conduit should be lined with gold. It shouldn't. Copper will do. That's John Piper. I footnoted my sermon. I don't know if that makes me a nerd, but that's from the book Desiring God. We have that out there in our little library that you can buy books from. Great book. This is the guy who is a part of, he's the pastor of the church that gives so much money away that the IRS has to audit them. I mean, he has his thumb on this issue of what it means to sacrificially give. Their entire church staff picked the poorest neighborhood in their city and moved there. These people have just an amazing vision of what it means to give and to give sacrificially. And I'm not saying we need to go find the poorest neighborhood to go live in. I'm not saying if you live in a wealthy neighborhood, move out. What I'm saying is let's just start. Let's start to think sacrificially. I see a lot of people give. But I don't know if I see a lot of people give sacrificially, myself included. I'm paying for school right now, and I wonder, when I get done with school, I'm going to have a lot of leftover money. What am I going to do with that? Am I going to immediately take all that and update my lifestyle? Am I going to immediately take all that and say, well, where can I invest this? Where can I, maybe a new video game system will be out by then. How am I going to spend this money? What am I going to do with that? Or am I going to say, you know what? I've lived without this money all this long. I've been going to school and putting money into school. I already know what it's like not to have that money. So when I get it, it shouldn't be that big a deal to give it away. It shouldn't be that big a deal for me to find ways to give that money because I'm already used to not living with it. Now, I am going to be a father of, here pretty soon, two girls, so maybe that'll be a factor, but we'll work it out. So we jump on this hedonic treadmill. We start, you know, we make this much money. We're going to live with that much money, and we lose sense of what it means to sacrificially give. Think about the life you had. If you're like the normal person, if you're like anything like Casey and I, when you started off much different than where you're at right now. Okay, the house you live in now, you didn't have when you just got out of college or when you just got into the workforce. You didn't have it. We lived in a 400-square-foot apartment, okay? Now, if you want an idea of 400 square feet, I think it's maybe half the size of this stage. If I take back the curtain, I don't know. It's tiny, okay? It felt like it was, you know, it was not any longer than this. Let's just say it was half of this. Is that good? Everyone okay with that? 400 square feet, half the auditorium. It was divided into four parts. We had a bedroom. There was a closet in that bedroom. We had a bathroom. We had like this weird kitchenette. Is that the proper term? Not really a kitchen, but you know, it worked. And we had this little living room area. You know, it's just divided into four equal spots. And 400 square feet is tiny. And we made it work, you know. We had just gotten married. We somehow made that work. And now looking back on that, I don't think I could do that again. I mean, some of you are probably saying, I don't think I ever, what are you talking about? I didn't even know an apartment existed with 400 square feet. That's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. But it was cheap. So we lived in there, and the next thing we moved up, you know, Casey got a job, got out of school, and so we're like, hey, we need to, or I got out of school. Casey was still in school. I got out of school, and I was like, okay, we need to do something different because 400 square feet is driving me nuts. So we got another apartment, and it was twice the size. That's your just kind of your average, you know, apartment, I guess, you know, somewhere around there. And it was twice the size, and we lived with that. And then Casey got out of work, or got out of school and got a job. And so we said, you know what? We don't need to rent. We don't need to live in an apartment. Why don't we move into a house? And so we did. And now, you know, 5 years later, I have no concept of how we ever made this little 400-square-foot apartment work. Because I've just gotten so accustomed to living in a bigger house, you know, living in more space. And it's just become a part of my lifestyle that I take for granted. I don't even think about until I force myself to say, oh yeah, I used to live in that. I used to live in this tiny little thing. And we do that with all these other areas in our life. We just jump on this treadmill and we stay there, and then it becomes work. It's no longer a joyous thing. It becomes work, and we have to maintain, and we have to keep it going in order to stay in the same spot. So what is the solution? The solution to having money and the call to sacrificial giving. What magic words am I going to give you today? Jump off the treadmill. I'm hoping I have tied treadmill with spending money on yourself so closely together that all of you will just implicitly hate spending money on yourself like we all hate jumping on the treadmill. So if I've tied those two together, maybe it'll be like this subliminal connection when the next time you go to spend money, you'll get like really winded and be like, oh my goodness, I can't. Okay, we'll just leave the wallet back in the pocket. That's good enough. But we've got to find a way that we jump off this treadmill, take a broad spectrum, take this broad look at life, and not just so narrow focused on what's right in front of us and trying to just jump in this cycle, run in the rat race. But how are we going to do that? And this is difficult. This is something that I can't give you, but this is something I think I can direct you towards, and Lord willing, God can do it. Matthew 13:44. And Jesus says, the kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and covered up. Then in his joy, he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. This is what we need in order to 'cause here's the thing. The whole idea of the hedonic treadmill is you're doing this because the stuff you're buying makes you feel good. I mean, it feels good when you buy a new car. You know, it satisfies something in our life when we spend money to buy the things that make us feel good. You know, it satisfies something. So it'd be foolish of me to say, don't spend money on yourself. It's evil, wicked, and then close the book and walk off the stage. It'd be ridiculous because we're creatures designed to have some sort of connection, some sort of element of pleasure. You're gonna seek pleasure. The question is, where are you going to seek it? You know, it says the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he covered up this treasure. He was digging or something, and he came across this treasure and said, oh, my goodness, this is unbelievable. It reminds me of a story. There's a man named Jeb. He's this poor guy. You know, he lived in the mountains and could barely feed his family. Okay? And one day, he's hunting, you know. He's shooting at a rabbit. Maybe some of you have heard the story. And he hits the ground, and oil springs up. And that changes his life. He has found something that has far surpasses any riches he has ever seen before in his life. And he sells this field because he knows this is going to give me so much money. Look what I found, this treasure. And that's when I read this story, that's what I'm seeing is this guy sees a treasure in the field, and he makes his entire life about buying that field. I need this field because I know what's there. And what is there is better than any of the other possessions I have. There is so much here, so much value that I place here, that all this other stuff, whatever. I'll sell it. I'll get rid of it. Because I want this. I have to have this. And that's what the kingdom of God is like. Now, the kingdom of God is a very difficult concept, but let me give you a slice of what I'm talking about. If we value the kingdom of God, that means we value Christ reigning in this world. We want Jesus to be the king of this world. Not politically, but we want him to be over this world. We want him to see his will happen through this world. Not just in our lives, but in the lives of others overseas. We want Jesus to be king. And so we will give money to send missionaries to people who have never heard about him. 1%, 1.7% of Christian giving goes to unreached people groups. People that have never heard Jesus, only 1.7% of everything that Christians give go to that. And then we sit here and say, we want Jesus to be king of the world. Let's start lining up. Let's start really thinking, do we really value the kingdom of heaven? Is this something that we really value, that we are going to spend our entire life directed towards pursuing this one goal? That we're going to make more. Some of us, say some of us are hurting financially. You know, the issue isn't, you know, okay, I'm really poor and now, you know, Weston's telling me to give more money. I'm saying, let's start finding ways that we can trim our budgets. Oof, did that one hurt? I'm sorry. Let's find ways we can trim our budgets. Let's find ways we can stop spending money or as much money on certain things and go. I mean, if some of you might not have a budget, and this sermon might just be like way over here, you're like, I don't even use a budget. I don't even know what you're talking about. I can't spell budget. Let's think about it, you know? Let's look at our finances. What are we spending money on? Jesus says, where our treasure is, our heart will be also. Where am I spending my money? That's where my heart is. You know, where can I cut some stuff, cut some spending, that I can give that money to the poor? That I can give that money to see the will of God flesh out in this world. And that's what I see in this Beverly Hillbillies version of the gospel. It calls us to sacrifice. It calls us to say, look, we've got this amazing possession, the kingdom of God. Our needs are satisfied. We can eat and we can live. Jesus has provided us this eternal relationship that far surpasses anything, that now I want to work and enlist in his service to see his will done throughout the world. And I will give my money, and I will even find ways to tweak my budget, to spend a little less here, you know, so I can make more money, so I can spend more money, seeing God's name spread out through providing for the poor, through providing for overseas people who have next to nothing. You know, if you really want, you know, to shock your system, look up on YouTube, try to find some videos of what life is like in other cultures. You know, I went to Indonesia when I was in college, and maybe this is probably what has influenced me a little bit on this issue is, you know, you see a guy walk 5 miles up and down as many times as he can, floating a log down a river so he can make a quarter a day. That's going to change you. That's going to open your, I mean, just broaden your horizons slightly, you know, and start to give a little bit, and you'll find that once it becomes a pattern, it becomes easier. You know, you got to jump off that treadmill for a second, find some ways to cut that budget, start looking at who needs, who's in need. There's a few ways we do this at the church that are going to be really awesome, and I want you to look at. These are some opportunities that we can start to give sacrificially. There's Operation Christmas Child, where we're going to be filling up boxes and sending that overseas. That's a great opportunity. The Christmas store, there are families in our community that, you know, with the economy have been hit, you know, people losing jobs, you know, maybe a death in a family, something that has affected their family to the point where they're not really going to have Christmas, you know, Christmas at all. And it's just, you know, they have next to nothing. They're worried about food. They're worried about, how am I going to keep this house? Am I going to have to move out of the school district? There are some people who have some big struggles. And so the Christmas store allows us to help these people facilitate some sort of Christmas, some sort of the fun activity, and you know, really give them an environment that their family can grow together and enjoy, and give them an awesome Christmas for these kids that are in elementary school. And so that's another opportunity coming up. That'll be in November. And then Advent Conspiracy is what we did last year, where we're encouraging everyone, okay, take one gift out of what you would spend and spend that on, give that to this collection that we're going to have, that we're going to send overseas. Last year, we gave money to help build a well so people in Africa could have fresh drinking water. I'm not sure where the money's going this year, but that's going to come up later in December. And, you know, if you gave one gift last year, give two this year. If you gave up giving, you know, a quarter of the gifts you were going to give up half. Guys, this is really helpful for you. If you want to not have to shop, okay, and you want to avoid the awkward moment of opening the present from grandma who gave you these weird socks or something, you know, if you want to avoid that, just give it all, right? Okay? It sounds crazy, but there are some who do that, you know, and just what I'm saying is, if whatever you're at and you're giving, try to see how can you give a little more. You know, the world is not barren with need. There's need all around us, and the gospel is saying to us, God, Jesus is saying, I have fulfilled your needs. I have entered into your life. Give to my will. Give to what my people, the poor, the needy, and that's what he's calling us to do. So think about these opportunities. You can see them on the information board. The Operation Christmas Child is going to be this month. Christmas Store next month. Advent Conspiracy in December. And I just think this is such a great lifeblood of this church that we do to continue to give outside of ourselves. You know, to continue to give, you know, hey, we could buy, you know, a better sound system, or hey, we could be saving up for a building. What are we doing? We're giving to the community. That's awesome. And that's what I want to encourage, and that's what I want to promote, and just ask you guys to begin to think about, how can I give more? Is it possible? Percentage-wise, is it possible? Monetarily, is it possible? What can I do? Where's the need that I can fill? So let's go to the Lord in prayer and worship him. Lord, I pray that you would I pray that you would fulfill every heart desire that we have. That you would be so in touch with us, that we would be so in touch with you in reading the scriptures and praying, that we would not feel as though we have any need. And I pray that you would affect us in this way so that we can feel free to give. Lord, we worship and praise you this day. In Jesus' name, amen.